As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Time now for Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Well, we don't want to take risks. I mean, we want to be aggressive. I think there's a difference between taking risks and being aggressive and adding quality players and people to the roster. That'll happen throughout player acquisition. I think that's something that's important, but you know, certainly the talent of the player, you know, has to be evaluated first, and then you go through a lot of different exercises and conversations and, you know, to try to figure out, you know, the type of person. But you know, you can't win and you can't do what we want to do with just a bunch of good dudes. That's not going to get it done.
Welcome into Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Coach Mike Vrabel of the New England Patriots earlier this week in his pre-draft press conference. They want to be aggressive, Mego. He wants to be aggressive. Do you like the aggression? Do you expect them to be aggressive? Do you even think that there's any chance that they're going to have an opportunity to be aggressive? Because the way it sounds right now, it's like nobody's moving in this draft, or at least very little bit. And so to me, that would be where the aggression comes in, but I don't really know that there's an opportunity there.
First of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Almost good afternoon.
Diving right into it.
No, you're so ready. We're what, 5 days away from the draft at this point?
Yeah,
you've been waiting for months, dude. So
final mock
this
draft
is your
drops
time.
Monday. So
I understand it's like Christmas Eve.
You're getting
squirrely over
there.
Yeah,
no pleasantries today.
It's 70s outside. So like everything's suddenly it's spring. NBA playoffs are starting tomorrow.
I feel like restless. You ever get that feeling where your legs are just like
all the time?
Yeah.
Restless leg syndrome.
Yeah. I have that.
That's my life.
I've had that for the last like couple of days, and just like knowing that the draft
restless
is so close.
Draft syndrome.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm just like itching for
you're
it.
Like rubbing your hands together. You're like trade back.
Like
trade
an
back.
Addict. I'm like scratching my neck. I'm like, I need the draft.
Chappelle Show.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was at that press conference that Mike Vrabel held earlier this week, and I thought he did a really good job of not giving up the game. Like, that was my big takeaway.
Yep.
He was extremely diplomatic. He was trying to make it sound like, hey, we know that there's starting tackles in this draft. I'm not going to name any of them or what round they're in or if they're going to be starters right away, but the door is also open to anything that if anybody wants to call the office. That was really the job that he had. I think what he gave away a little bit, in my opinion, and it may be that I'm too deep in the draft stuff, is
okay.
When he said, we want to be aggressive, but we don't want to take risks, and there's a difference. And that just sounds like Will Campbell to me. Because if you think about what Will Campbell really represents, you're thinking to yourself, how is that aggressive? He's always going to say that they're going to be aggressive.
Well, it also leans more towards risk to me. And that's kind of
I don't think so. Because think about it this way, Shime. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we both feel like there's risks because we want a left tackle. If you're going to draft somebody on the offensive line with the number 4 overall pick, you got to take tackle. That's a premium spot. You need left tackle, and you want your left tackle of now and of the future. But worst case scenario, at least from the outside perspective with Will Campbell, is that if he's not a tackle, he'll be a starting guard. And that makes both of us a little nauseated.
Yes.
But if you're looking at it from a risk perspective, it's not the risk of, say, a N'Keal Harry. It's not the risk of, we whiffed on this completely. Mm-hmm. It's not even the risk of some of your second round receivers of, like, they're barely even in the league.
Yeah.
It's the risk of, it's not really a premium position, but it's still a position of need for your team, and you still get a starter. And so when I hear that they're risk averse, that makes me think Will Campbell, because it's like, hey, there's a great upside. If the measurables don't matter, his arm length doesn't matter, and he can be a starting left tackle, and the downside is still pretty safe. And I don't like it. Like, yeah. I know we both don't like that about the pick, because it's a number four overall pick, but that's kind of what I... What, as the week goes on and I've thought more about his availability, how I feel about it.
Yeah, if you're considering the fact that Will Campbell being able to play guard at an NFL level is like a safety blanket for the pick, then yeah, you're probably right. There isn't much risk to it, because I think even if he can't play left tackle and he can only play left guard or right guard, like, the tape shows he can play on the offensive line. Like, he's a good football player. It's just the measurables
don't
add up.
That's what I'm saying. They could see it as, we're getting a starter either way.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, is this a premium position, and is this somebody who's a game changer? I don't think so.
But, like, if I'm doing that, I don't do that with the fourth overall pick. And I think that's what...
But they're stuck.
Yeah, but that's what kind of irks me. Like, at four, you have to take at least some risk. There has to be some risk to it. It's not... This isn't a home run draft. You're not going to get Ja'Marr Chase at the number four overall pick. Unfortunately, it's just not going to happen that way. But when I look at it, like, if I do want to minimize risk but get the best player available, I just take the running back. Like, I understand that it's not sexy and it's not necessarily a position of dire importance in the NFL right now, even though some teams are really relying heavily on the running back. It's not the number one position. They're clearly not the highest paid. But... like, this guy is head and shoulders better than everybody else left in the draft. After Carter and Hunter, he is the best player left in the draft. And so I sit there kind of wondering, like, are you going to stand true to what you told us earlier? And you want to take the best player available?
I don't think they're going to.
Or are you just going to do exactly what Elliott Wolf said you did last year and just draft for need?
It's somewhere in the middle is the honest to God's truth to me. Like, in any way that you slice it, I don't know how you don't come up somewhere in the middle, because you start talking about what's a premium position. Running back, we would both agree, is not a premium position.
Sure.
So then it starts talking about need at your premium positions, and you tie yourself up in a pretzel. Like, there, that conversation, I feel like, to me at this point, is just kind of meaningless, because they're going to say that they're drafting best player available because they know that they need elite talent on the roster, and that sounds good, and they have the number four overall pick.
Yeah,
like, that's that is what they should be saying. I just don't think it means very much right now.
I want to see the kind of process to this pick, because I want to know the reasoning exactly why you're doing what you're doing. Because if it is in fact that they're like, all right, this is a minimal risk pick, we know we get a starter, blah blah blah, I get it. But
do you think we'll get that from Vrabel and company after the pick? Or do you think we'll get kind of an F you, we did what we did, we're smart, we like what we have, and you'll see it in training camp?
I think they would more keep silent than be like, F you, like, we love this guy, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think they'll be excited about whatever they pick it for, because that's just what teams have to do. They have to play the charade, and that's the way it is.
The charade.
I don't know that Vrabel is thrilled with the idea of taking Will Campbell at four.
See, there's this side to it that I hear a lot of people talking about who seem to know Vrabel better than me. I don't know Vrabel. I don't have a personal relationship with him. And honestly, he still scares me.
Yeah.
He scares me.
He's intimidating.
He's trying to ask Vrabel a question in person. Like, I'll be completely on Front Street. It scares me a little bit.
Well, because not only is he intimidating as just like
he's
a human being, he's really smart.
It's not like the same way as we all accepted that you could ask a legit question to Bill Belichick and he would turn you into a puddle of misery in front of everybody, and it happens to everybody, and that's how it goes. With Vrabel, it's like also new, and I don't know. We're getting into my own self-doubt
insecurities
in the room. But my point is, when you talk about taking Ashton Jeanty at number four, I also just look like Shime. You're somebody who goes seven rounds deep in your draft analysis.
Yep.
And this is supposed to be a really good draft for running backs. Yeah. So if that's a position where you could get a real impact player, mm-hmm. like maybe not a Saquon Barkley level, but a real impact player at a non-premium position elsewhere in the draft, do you really want to do it at number four?
Yeah, and I think that's the best argument against Gentry, right?
Thank
you. You're welcome. Because I think you look at the second round, a guy like Travion Henderson will probably be there. Quinshon Judkins will probably be there. So they are kind of guys that could come in and make an impact right away that you could draft in the second round. And in the third round, you get into like the Samsons of the world and the Caleb Johnson out of Iowa. So like you can move farther and farther down the list as you go. But I think that the gap from Gentry to like Omarion Hampton would be my number two back. The gap between those guys is way greater than the gap between, you know, Will Campbell and Armand Membu or Kelvin Banks or Josh Simmons or anything. And I think there's an opportunity to get like legitimate left tackles in the second round. I think Ariante Ursary out of Minnesota and Ozzie Trapillo, the kid out of BC, both guys are going to go in the second or third round, and I think they could come in and be starting tackles. And their measurables are better. I'm a little bit more confident in it than I am with Will Campbell, which is weird because Will Campbell's going to be going in the top 10, and these guys are going to be going on, you know, the second or Dante too. And so it may sound confusing, but I look at them, I look at the profile. Are they quite as athletic as Will Campbell? Maybe not, but the measurables are better. They've been playing the position a long time. They get it. They understand it. I feel like they would be a better fit on day one than a guy like Will Campbell. So I'm willing to take the risk on a running back at four. I still like Tet McMillan. I know that's not a popular thing. I'd still be willing to take the receiver at four over Will Campbell. But again, like, I just think there's other opportunities for tackles in the draft, just like with running back.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the difference that we're talking about, again, comes back to what's the downside of taking a tackle in the first round versus on day two? And the downside that they'll see is the tackle is a guard. And it sucks that it's your fourth overall pick, but you can also talk yourself into this is the draft that you're stuck in, and you're just not going to get the value with that pick that you would have last year or the year before, or a lot of different drafts. But with Ozzie or with Josh Connerly Jr., maybe the downside is that's not an NFL starter. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we hear Vrabel talk about being aggressive but measuring the risk, to me, that's the calculation. And I don't like it. Like, I'd rather take the swing, but at the same time, I can at least understand the logic of that. I don't agree with it, but if they're just trying to meaningfully upgrade their roster across the board, I think that that's where that gets you. And so I think we all just need to make ourselves comfortable with the Will Campbell at the number four pick.
And you're right. And the sports books would suggest that that's the case too. The last time I checked, it might have changed, but the last time I checked, it was like minus 220 that Will Campbell is going to go number four to the New England Patriots. And so not a 100% certainty, but pretty certain from the sports books that they think Will Campbell might go four.
I'm with you though. And I do think it says something about this number four pick where we've been doing this exercise. We did it last night on Boston Sports Tonight on NBC Sports Boston. And our producer basically said that they've been doing this exercise for 3 days straight because everybody has a different answer.
Yep.
And you kind of given yours away, which is if it goes chalk and you're stuck at four and you can't trade out, there is no real trade partner. Mm-hmm. Who do you take at four? What player do you take at four? And not everyone said Will Campbell. And it's like, you know, Tommy Curran has been talking about Warren and wanting the tight end.
Wiggy's all over Warren, too.
And yeah, and it's just like all over the place of Mason Graham or where do you go, like, position-wise. I'm at the point where I'm in complete silly season. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe you just shoot your shot with Matthew Golden. Like, maybe you go do that. Maybe you take the Texas receiver who's projected to be a wide receiver one in the next 2 years and is still kind of a raw product, but at least has separation and body control and looks like he could give something to your room that they haven't had in like 10 years, which is somebody who can actually create separation and not just play on the inside in the slot.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up Matthew Golden. I would comp him. He's very similar to like Stephon Diggs. Like, that's the kind of guy he would want to learn from.
He can play at all three levels.
Yeah, he can play kind of in the slot. He can play on the outside. He can play at all three levels. Deep speed, middle of the field. He can run routes. And, like, I think that would be a really good guy to learn from. For me, four is a bit of a stretch, but I get the logic, right? If you want,
I told you silly season.
You're right. There's a lot of silly season.
I also just really don't like
Tet
McMillan's body type and receiver type, so I can't.
What is it that you don't like about Tet? Is it just like the size?
Mm-hmm. I think you need somebody who I'm always more. It sounds so weird to say attracted to.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always more drawn to the receiver who can create separation. And I don't want to say athletic because it's just a different type of athleticism. But I feel like the Patriots have been trying to have. I'm stuck in the N'Keal Harry world. We've talked about this, that it's not just one to one. You can't always compare it. It's just not my type.
Yeah, and I get that. I just think when I look at Tet McMillan,
I even think of like Devontae Parker. It's like if you're the type going up physically and trying to get the 80-20 ball or 50-50 ball,
more T. Higgins than he is Devontae Parker.
And Higgins is injured a lot.
Yeah, fair. That's fair. But like when I look at him, like, I mean, upside of Tet McMillan is like Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Evans, T. Higgins, like that's your upside comp because there is some yak ability for Tet McMillan that I don't think you see it a lot of the times with his size.
Does that come from breaking contact or does that come from speed though?
I think it is a little bit of both. I think he is very good at making a cornerback miss after the catch. And then there is a little bit of speed. Like I think he is faster. Like in runaway, he is faster than a guy like Mike Evans.
Mike Evans is in his 30s now.
Well, yeah, even like prime Mike Evans.
Okay.
Like, I think Tet McMillan is faster kind of on straightaway speed, whereas Mike Evans is probably a little bit better contested catch-wise. Like, I don't think Tet McMillan is just I'm going to go up and beat a receiver. It's an 80-20 ball like Devontae Parker type deal. That's not who Tet McMillan is. Tet McMillan is a good route runner. He's going to be open because he runs really good routes, and I think he has a great first step when it comes to beating a corner, and I think that's what makes him so successful is he gets extra yards after the catch for that, and so that's one of the reasons I like him more than Matthew Gilman.
Have we both completely talked ourselves away from Membu?
Yeah.
Armon Membu.
Well, you don't need a right tackle, and there's far more risk in Membu.
Yeah, we're just like, we're not doing the Isaiah Wynn go into the left side.
Nope, absolutely not, especially when, like you said, there is that security blanket with Will Campbell that even if he can't play left tackle, he can play left guard, which we still kind of need. Whereas if Membu can't slide to left tackle,
you have Moses Morgan.
You have to risk trying to kick Moses Morgan to left tackle. And
Morgan,
he's been,
Moses Morgan.
Yeah,
I'm going to do
Morgan
that all
Moses,
year.
Yeah.
Moses and, Morgan, Morgan Moses. It's Morgan Moses.
Morgan Moses. And he has played right tackle now for years. And so I don't think kicking him to left tackle is the best thing either. So for me, Membu is kind of out of the discussion for the New England Patriots. If you're going to take a different offensive lineman, you're looking at Kelvin Banks out of Texas, who has the same, I think, security blanket as Will Campbell, in that if he can't play left tackle, he can probably just play left guard. And or a guy like Josh Simmons out of Ohio State, who has all the measurables, has the potential to play left tackle.
You love
just
him.
Dealt with injuries. Yeah, he's really good.
Him.
He's a really good football player, but again, there's an injury question, which is why he's going to slip to the end of the first round.
I do love, and I know we have to go to trending in a minute, but I do love that at least the Patriots have been so bad in the draft over the last decade that we can look at each of these guys and it's like a haunted house of Patriots draft history, mm-hmm, where we're like, oh no, watch out, that's his Tet N'Keal Harry. Oh, watch out, is Membu Isaiah Wynn. We've been
so
through this
drafts.
First round before.
Trying to dodge bullets.
You know, who's Cole Strange? Watch out. Yeah. It's like jump scares at every corner.
Like, no, please don't do that.
Who's the Sony Michel?
Sony Michel of this draft. Honestly,
you're not going to say Genty.
No, if I had to take a guess at who the Sony Michel of this draft would be, it would be like Quinshon Judkins.
Okay.
I like Judkins, but I don't love him. He's not towards the top of my list. I like Travion Henderson way more than I like Quinshon
Judkins. At this rate, if the Sony Michel gets you a Super Bowl, then you're doing great.
Okay.
I know, like, Patriots fans are such
fair
snobs
point
about that Super Bowl.
Oh, God. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Pats and the draft. See a couple people already lined up. We'll get to you on the other side. We'll also, our friend Nick Fitzy Stevens had a scoop on WEEI Afternoons just yesterday. We will talk about that coming up next year on Mego and Shine. But right now, Zach is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox beat the White Sox 10-3 last night at Fenway. Rookie Hunter Dobbins making his second major league start. He went six innings, allowing two runs, just one of those earned, on three hits while striking out six. Trevor Story stayed hot. He went 3-for-4 with a pair of three-run home runs. And here's what Red Sox manager Alex Cora had to say about his shortstop after the game.
When he's healthy, he's 30-30. You know, this guy's really good. So we haven't seen the healthy version of Trevor Story. My job is to keep him on the field, and I'll do my best. Plays he produces, you know, and, you know, so far it's been fun to watch.
Game two of that four-game set against the White Sox continues this afternoon when Garrett Crochet takes the mound opposite his former team for the second time this season. Danvers native Shane Smith getting the start for Chicago. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Joe Wiles getting you started on the Mass Mutual pregame show at 3:10. Then Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks will have the call of the game. First pitch at 4:10. NBA play-in tournament wrapped up last night. The Miami Heat and Memphis Grizzlies claiming the 8th seed in their respective conferences. Playoffs officially get underway this afternoon with Game 1 in the Bucks, Pacers, Nuggets, Clippers, Knicks, Pistons, and Lakers T-Wolves series. Celtics, of course, have to wait until tomorrow to kick off their pursuit of Banner 19. They'll host the 7 seed Orlando Magic in Game 1 tomorrow afternoon. Tip-off at the Garden set for 3:30. NHL playoffs also kicking off tonight. St. Louis Blues heading to Winnipeg to take on the Jets, and Charlie Coyle and the Colorado Avalanche are in Dallas to take on the Stars. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Mego and Shime coming up after this.
Now, more of Mego and Shime on WEEI.
If somebody that we wanted the Patriots to select very badly, Abdul Carter, were to fall to fourth, and I know the scenario is slightly unlikely, if he were to fall at fourth overall, how would you feel about a certain team that recently won the Super Bowl calling up your New England Patriots in desperation and want of Abdul Carter and offering a certain wide receiver who has admitted that he loves New England and would love to play for the Patriots and possibly more selections in a blockbuster draft day trade?
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was our friend Nick Fitzy Stevens yesterday on WEEI Afternoons with the idea that if Abdul Carter falls to four, the Philadelphia Eagles will be calling the Patriots up on the phone and being like, look, we want Carter. We want to come up. We'll give you A.J. Brown in some kind of package to come get Abdul Carter. Mego, I simply ask you, would you make the trade with the Eagles if Abdul Carter is there for?
No.
No?
No. I take Abdul Carter. I also, like, I think it's a spicy idea, and if somebody from the Eagles or Connected or whatever is putting out there, it's, I guess what surprises me is the deal that they gave A.J. Brown and the hit of dead money that it would land them on.
Yeah.
I guess that part is like, my question would be.
So you think it's more, you just think it's unlikely, or do you?
Yeah.
Just, okay.
I think, well, so I'm wondering, like, if this is the case, what would have happened between giving A.J. Brown that deal and getting to this point where they're so in love with Abdul Carter and this idea that they would move in there and absorb the dead money?
Well, I think
that's my question.
I think the changing point would probably be the fact that Abdul Carter was available to them. Like,
okay.
Right? I think that's kind of, you know, they were living in a world where A.J. Brown was clearly wanted a new contract. They were, I mean, they're picking 32. They just won the Super Bowl, so they give him the contract. Abdul Carter, not even close to in their sights. Now, however, it seems like maybe if Abdul Carter falls to four, there's an opportunity there where the Patriots like A.J. Brown because he used to play for Mike Vrabel and need a top-end wide receiver, and there's that opportunity there that they could trade up using A.J. Brown to get Abdul Carter.
So just to put this into perspective, because yep. I wanted to make sure that I was right about okay. this, the dead cap hit that they would take by trading A.J. Brown, who's 28 years old, mm-hmm. would be nearly $90 million. That's a pretty hefty space to take. And I think if you're, let's see, right now, the space that they have is $22 million. So I don't really get the calculation there. But again, there may be something in between that's changed or shifted. Yeah. Like,
and this,
I don't doubt that that information's out there. I'm just wondering like the mechanics of how it would work.
And I think a lot of this, I mean, you know, contracts are funny money. So I bet that could, that number
like,
could
do you
be
move,
changed.
Do you move around that, all the contracts on the Eagles to make that work?
Exactly. I think there's a way that they probably could do that. That's far above my head that those capologists out there might know. But I think just from the perspective of it, I don't know that I would just do A.J. Brown for number four straight
Absolutely
up.
Not. Like, straight up, I would not. That's why I said at the very starting point, if this was some, a phone call that you got to throw in something else, too. Because Abdul Carter falling to you to number four, like, unless, I'll cage this with, if there's information out there that is destructive about Abdul Carter, whether it's with the foot, banged up foot,
the personality
that we've heard about,
thing that just started coming out, which makes no
which
sense,
which always like bums me out a little bit.
Yeah,
that we do get to this point in the draft talk where it's like we've been talking about this group of guys. Really, if you're covering a team like the Patriots that were bad all year, you've been talking about it since like October, November.
Yeah,
and now weeks ahead of time, it's always okay. There's some serious character questions,
which is bogus.
And it's like, well, why didn't these character questions come out in January?
And I can tell you why, because they're not true, and it's a team like the Patriots' way of trying to make sure he falls to four, like trying to convince another team that there are issues and that he gets to four. Because I can assure you, if he is at four and there is no A.J. Brown trade on the table, they will be drafting Abdul Carter at four if he's there. Like, it's just, there's no question in my mind.
And I think even, like, again, if you want to go back to Vrabel earlier in the week, what he was kind of saying was, I'm not saying that he was calling Abdul Carter a bad dude.
Yeah.
But there's been so much made about like, oh, they're not going to take DK Metcalf because they're not going to make a deal for him or sign him because of his character considerations. Or these, oh my God, they took Steph Diggs, like they signed him and he has character considerations and blah, blah, blah. And so Mike Vrabel saying like, yeah, we're not just going to win with like with a bunch of Boy Scouts, essentially. Yeah. Like, we know that nobody's perfect. And I think that that, again, tips your hand a little bit towards Abdul Carter of, we're at this point 5 days from the draft. If people are coming out with character, rumors, considerations, whatever, we'll take that into the equation. But that's the talent first.
Let's go to Vincent in the car, wants to talk about the patch draft. What's up, Vincent?
Hey, you guys. Thanks for taking the call. Depending on who falls to you at number four, I think the worst-case scenario would be just taking somebody just to take somebody. You know, because obviously it doesn't seem like any of the offensive linemen are blowing doors off as far as being the number four pick. So would it be better if, you know, Carter doesn't fall to you at four, that you trade out of the fourth pick, get another an additional first-round pick for next year's draft? Obviously, Sean, you're kind of a draft guy, so you probably know next year's draft better than all of us. Is there anybody in next year's draft where you can look at and say, all right, if you get two first rounders and a top 10 pick, that would be worth trading out of the fourth spot this year, and then maybe taking a flyer on a guy in the second or third round to see how they develop? Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Vincent. Yeah, there's nobody that stands out to me, right? Like, the real, this far in advance, at least for someone like me, like the only guys that you really kind of even notice or pay attention to at all are the quarterbacks a lot of the time, unless there is a generational type player that's kind of working his way up. The only generational players are a couple of wide receivers who still won't be eligible next year. So you have to wait another year. So it's kind of a waiting game for that. You and I have talked about this, Mego. I don't mind trading down and kind of kicking the can down the road a little bit, but I wouldn't like totally trade out of the first round. I wouldn't do that,
no.
Especially from four.
And also, it just, the bigger question is there going to be a trade partner there?
Yeah, like, and I think that's the biggest issue.
You know, is there going to be somebody who is so thirsty to get into that four spot that they're going to trade up for you? Because it really looks like after those first three go, it's such a dice roll of what you're looking for, what you think of them, and just puts you in a tough spot at number four.
It's just not as stacked as a draft as it was last year, or even the last couple years. Like, it's just, there's not nearly as many blue chip players as there normally are in the draft. And so it's kind of unfortunate that you're picking at four this year, because if you're better next year and you're not picking until 10, 15, you know, like, you're not going to get as good of a player as you would have hoped, which kind of stinks.
Shyam, why do you think the draft is this way this year? Like, do you think that it has anything to do with the COVID years? Do you think it has anything to do with a decade ago we're talking so much about the head injury stuff and the movie about it and, like, that was all over the map? Like, do you think that there's any kind of common denominator to why this draft is just kind of not up to par with what we're used to getting excited about?
No, I mean, I think it's just kind of the cycle of college football sometimes, is it's like there's just some crappy drafts sometimes. That's all.
What do you
happens.
Think was the last draft? I don't want to put you on the spot, but like how long ago was the last one that was as rough as this one? Because I'd like to think that it's just a cyclical thing and oops, it's bad timing for you. But I do wonder, like, is there any kind of underlying factor, or does it have to do with, well, these kids were in COVID for a while, so like last year's draft was so stacked because you had guys who got an extra year and so they came out more polished, more developed, or looked better than maybe they even were?
I think that's probably more of what it was, is it's just like a bunch of guys kind of came out all at the same time last year due to the COVID and all those different, the transfer portal, all those variables, and so you just got this huge class of guys, and so now the, you know, I think in crops, you know, sometimes you have to let the field go fallow a little bit and then you regrow and you get a good crop again and stuff. And so I think that's kind of what we're seeing this year. I think the last Farmer Shime. Then all my experience on Farmland, the video game. I think the last time I can think of a draft anywhere even similar was probably 2022. So like 3 years ago, okay. The Kenny Pickett draft.
Yeah.
Like quarterback wise, that draft was horrendous. There are some good players. Again, like Aiden Hutchinson, really good player. Derek Stingley now has become a really, really good football player, but there were a lot of questions on him when he got drafted. Sauce Gardner, really good football player. And then the wide receivers were awesome in that draft. But again, they weren't taken until 8, 10, 12.
Who were the receivers there?
Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams.
Okay.
But then like you still get guys like Jahan Dotson and Treylon Burks and the tackle Trevor Penning. Like, so. And then, but then, like, the Chiefs get Trent McDuffie. That was the Coles Jones draft. Again, bad pick. So, there were, in every draft, there's going to be a handful of guys in the first round that are really good. And in this draft, there were. But from the outset, like, there wasn't as much blue chip talent as you thought. Guys like Jameson Williams were projected as risks. Like, that was a massive risk for the Detroit Lions to trade as far up as they did to draft Jameson Williams. And it might pan out for them. He's been pretty good, but he's also missed some time with suspension. There's some character issues there, so you never know. Trayvon Walker at number one overall really has not thrilled anybody. That was not a runaway pick. And so the offensive linemen in that draft were mediocre at best. Like, Ike Ekwonu, Evan Neal, Charles Cross.
Do you feel
Kenyon
like there's
Green.
Any lessons from that draft as you're just looking at it now, as you say, like, ugh.
Yes.
These offensive linemen are so just ceiling is mediocre.
The yes with the offensive linemen. Offensive linemen are very hit or miss. But the big lesson for me is no matter what you think of the receivers, they're going to be good.
Okay.
A lot of the receivers you take are going
to be good. Give me the golden boy. Give me the golden eye theme. You don't even know.
N64, like, golden eye.
N64. So
great. No odd job.
No odd job?
No odd job.
Why?
Oddjob's hat is like a busted weapon.
I don't even remember that. Is
you
throw it?
Oddjob throws his hat. It's like an insta-kill.
Okay. I feel like I always played that game on multiplayer mode.
Okay.
And so I wasn't really as into like the missions.
Got it. Okay.
Is that what they were called?
Yeah, I think so.
You go off on your own and you like play single player.
Yeah, yeah.
I was never as into that.
That's fair. I get that.
I was just trying to have a party.
Yeah. I get that. Oh, yeah. That's the best part. Let's go to Jim in New Hampshire. What's up, Jim?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Well, none of me guys. And Mago. Hey, I was just wondering, with preventing a trade, what do you think the top five would go like? And I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. What do you think the Browns are going to do? I mean, I know they could use a quarterback, but are they going to go after, you know, the two-way player there or what?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jim. I would guess that Travis Hunter is the pick at two for the Cleveland Browns. I think you're right. I think they want a quarterback. They need a quarterback, but I also think that they're comfortable enough with the combination of Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, that they would rather get a really good football player and kind of kick the can down the line for next year to get a quarterback.
Get Stefanski out of there.
I think it's all his fault.
No. I'm saying, like, save him.
Oh, say, okay. Rescue Stefanski.
No, it's ownership's fault.
Yeah, 100%.
It's ownership's fault over there. That ownership group.
They wanted Deshaun Watson.
Okay. If you look at ownership groups in professional sports over the last 10 years, the Browns have to be one of the worst ownership groups, if not just like one of the worst owners. Like, they might be the worst owners in professional sports. Stefanski is a good coach.
The Cons haven't done so well with the Jaguars either,
yeah,
to be fair.
That's true.
I would put them on the list.
Is there anybody from another sport that you would throw in there? Like, Dolan with the Knicks is perpetually hated.
Oh, he's just, but
at least
team's
they
good
get at
year.
Least they still get free agents. Yeah, at least they still swing trades. Yeah,
yeah, like,
it's not
would you count? Would you count like the Wizards? Because they're just like, honestly, it feels like every year they're horrendous.
Well, it's tough because I need to double check this. At least when I was growing up, it's the same ownership as the Caps.
Ted Leonsis?
Yeah, and the Caps are
great.
Yeah,
he does own the Capitals. Yeah, the Capitals are great.
It's kind of like 50-50 there. Mm. They cancel each other out, so I think that neutralizes it.
Yeah.
John Fisher with the A's.
Oh, good call. Good pull, Zach.
That's brutal.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's brutal.
They pay a minor league roster. They don't even pay a major league roster.
That's very tough. The Orioles just got sold, so they can't really qualify.
Correct.
Because they were real cheap.
We would have put the Commanders on there, but they are now way better ownership.
Yeah, they're doing great. Oh, did you hear? Commanders coming back to D.C.
Really?
At the old RFK spot. I'm really excited.
Interesting. That'll be awesome.
Yeah. It's happening. I think it's happening in like 2030.
I got to say, like, D.C. is like an awesome area. The Metro's great. Capitals Arena. It was at Capital One Arena for the Washington Capitals. Great spot. Went and saw a game there a year and a half, 2 years ago now.
It's all right.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it. I enjoy it.
I mean, I love D.C.
Yeah.
Hardly ever get to go back there now, but
Let's go to Mike in Randolph real quick. Wants to talk about the draft. What's up, Mike?
Hey guys. First off, Mayo, you're from DC, right?
Yes.
So it's a great spot, and my wife lives in Baltimore for a while, so we're going there twice in the next month for a wedding. But that's going to be a phenomenal stadium. Just talk about how one guy can literally revolutionize an entire city is Jaden, literally Jaden Daniels, you know, building a stadium essentially. But I want to talk about the draft real quick. And I love, I'm a Michigan guy. Abdul Carter destroyed us 2 years ago. The first two drives, J.J. McCarthy dropped back 8 times. 6 of those 8 times, Abdul Carter had J.J. McCarthy on his back, and it was a nightmare, which is why we ran the ball 35 straight times. There's rumors out there that Philadelphia really wants him, and you could potentially get a king's ransom for Abdul Carter. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on it, but if you could get, I heard A.J. Brown and a first and a third for that number 4 pick. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Yeah, so we played the Fitzy clip from yesterday. He talked about
how... He says he has a well-placed source. A well-placed
source that says that Howie Roseman would be lusting for Abdul Carter and be willing to trade A.J. Brown. If you're telling me I'm getting Brown, 32 overall, and a third-round pick, I'm in.
Especially because then, I mean, can you get Simmons there, or are you just going to get...
You could get Simmons or Connerly or Ursary or somebody. And also with that third round pick, like, if you wanted to, you could just package the third with 32 and move up farther up in the first round.
There you go.
If Josh Simmons falls enough, you could probably get him there. So I would, if you come away with a first round player, I don't care who it is, a first round player, whether it's Genty or a tackle, doesn't matter, and A.J. Brown, that is quite possibly the best case scenario for the New England Patriots.
I wonder what the calculation with A.J. Brown is. Everybody who's like, I'm not part so much of the cap is crap crowd. I think the cap is only crap if your ownership is interested in making it so.
Yeah.
And so my question still remains, like, what is the motivation to kind of move heaven and earth? Are they so in love with Abdul Carter, even with the questions that have recently surfaced around him?
617-779-7937. It's Mego and Shime here talking Pats draft on WEEI.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Has a video game theme song ever gone this hard?
Good question. Off the top of the dome, I don't think so.
I remember when this game came out, the summer after it came out, I was visiting my cousins in Michigan, and my grandma was, like, very old school, and she had this rule of, during the day, you are not allowed to watch TV, and you are not allowed, during the summer, you are not allowed to play video games.
Yeah.
You got to be outside. You're outside for, like, 6 hours. You can come in for 45 minutes for lunch, but other than that, like, I don't want to see you.
Yep.
And so we just went down the street to this kid's house and played GoldenEye in his basement.
Nice.
And ate Airheads and Warheads.
The best.
And that was like, we were like, yeah, Grandma, we were outside playing basketball for 3 hours.
Oh, as I got older, and I was playing more and more video games, my mother then went back to work and was no longer a stay-at-home mom. So even during the summer when me and my brothers were all at home, it's like, all right, parents are gone. Time to eat a bunch of candy and play video games. It's the best. We would like walk to the local convenience store, come back, and then just like play video games all day.
So when I first jumped back on the Patriots beat at the very end of training camp last summer, one of the first things I wrote, and I wonder if you'll understand this, I said, looking at the Patriots offense, they're a club. And I think I was right.
Did we talk about this or you brought it up on the Greg Hill show a while ago? No, I forget. But I remember discussing this.
I was wrong. It might have been hand-to-hand combat. You know, I said club at the time, but it might have been even worse.
Oh, God. The club reference is going right over my head.
The club was like a really clunky, inaccurate gun that you could pick up in GoldenEye. Okay. And it was like one of the lowest level guns that you could have. Like, if you don't have anything, you do hand-to-hand combat.
Yes.
And if you pick up a club, like the club is pretty much the next best thing. It just is like really inaccurate. It's clunky. Bad. It takes forever to reload. Like, it's not good.
Yes. Oh, God. 617-779-7937. The Patriots gearing up for the draft. Only 5 days away. I'm still restless. I can't wait. All I want is the NFL draft. But there's another kind of story going around the NFL surrounding our guy, Aaron Rodgers. He was on Pat McAfee on Thursday. He talked about meeting with the Jets, how that meeting went, where it lasted like, you know, 20 minutes. He talked about talking with the Giants and Brian Daboll, and then talking with the Steelers and Mike Tomlin and all these different things. But it seems like Aaron Rodgers is in a position where...
Okay. We were just talking, Shime, about how off air. We were talking about Pat McAfee and how polarizing he is the broad college game day audience.
Yep.
People love him or they're like, get him off my TV.
Yeah.
Is there a group of the Pat McAfee show fandom that really likes Rodgers still?
No.
Like, does Rodgers have ride or die fans still? Because I'm sure that there's like fringe people who are like, well, I just like that he goes against the grain on everything, and we need people like that who stand up for themselves and their beliefs. But is there actually like football fans who look at Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show and think that what we heard from him comes off the right way? And Zach, I think he's pulling some Aaron Rodgers clips from the Pat McAfee show. Was it yesterday that he was on?
Thursday.
All the days are blending together.
It's okay.
Right now.
Yeah, we played it on They Said It yesterday morning, so that's how I know it's Thursday. But yeah, it's, I don't know that there's necessarily football fans, but like, if I'm looking at a situation objectively, a team like the Steelers, I would give it a shot with Aaron Rodgers. You're a playoff team, and if you're asking me what's the ceiling for someone like Aaron Rodgers, if all things go right, what's the ceiling for a season with Aaron Rodgers compared to a rookie quarterback or Mason Rudolph? I would take Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah, I think you probably are a wild card team or a little better.
Yeah.
I think that's the ceiling. I think Rodgers is so much more cooked and washed than people want to admit that he is.
He might be. But I also think when you look at
his brain is cooked too. Like, that's a big
brain
part of
big
it.
Time cooked.
His brain is washed. Can you have
too
your
much,
brain washed?
Too much ayahuasca.
That's what he did. Yeah. The ayahuasca has washed Aaron Rodgers' brain. And he's like, guess what? I'd go out there for a $10 million contract. Like, I'd do it for a year. And it's like, why you want to jump in bed with that guy?
Zach, we have some Aaron Rodgers audio from his appearance on Pat McAfee from Thursday.
To make a commitment to a team,
is a big thing, whether you're a first-year player or a 20-year vet. And I had a lot of great conversations with a lot of teams. Not one of those was the Jets, because that wasn't a great conversation. I don't have anybody, you know, working on my PR staff. Like, Mia is the head of my PR. She tells me what the hell's going on if I need to know anything. I don't have any leaks. I have a very tight circle. I'm not out there putting shit out just to put shit out. That's just not how I operate. There's been a lot of people assuming they have...
Stop. That's enough. You're doing it right now. You're on one of the number one sports shows, just dumping on the Jets, but and how you did it. Like,
in
like
his mind, he's not doing it.
You don't need a PR staff because you go out there and you embarrass yourself every time that you speak publicly.
But for him, he's speaking his truth. So for him, this is coming
like
from the source.
Simultaneously trying to take the high road and say, well, I don't leak stuff. I don't make other teams look bad that I played for. It's like, no, you're on French Street, but it doesn't mean that you're not saying negative stuff about your former employer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was crapping on the Jets, basically.
Yeah, the whole time. Oh, man.
He made Aaron Glenn out to be like an absolute D-bag.
They made me meet in person so they could fire me. You know the other side of that coin is they didn't even grant me face-to-face. They called me just to fire me after what I tried to do for them.
So we
after
argued,
who I've been as a football player. Like, you can't win with this guy. You can't win on the field. You can't win in the realm of public opinion. Just stay away from him.
Yeah, but like, if you were gonna fire me, don't make me fly on a private jet for a few hours to come and then meet me with 20 minutes and then fire me. Like, if they were gonna meet him and, like, have a meeting, kind of what I would have expected them to do, sit down, have a legitimate meeting with Aaron Rodgers, see where head's at, see where everything's at, and then a couple days later, call him and be like, look, Aaron, I think we're going to go in another direction. But, like, thanks for coming in. We appreciate the time.
But if
like,
you've already made your decision.
But if you already made your decision, then why fly him in?
Because maybe you think that's a sign of respect to sit down and tell him in person. But
I don't think so. If I'm local, sure. If I just have to drive in,
because a private jet is such a hassle. Look, come on, this guy is such a butthead. Like,
I agree.
I don't disagree
that Aaron Rodgers is a total tool.
I can't defend any of this.
I totally agree. He's an absolute tool. But like at the same time, don't make me fly. Just call me.
I think I've fully reverted to 90s kid mode because I just called him a butthead.
Maybe. Next we're gonna have to find his Beavis. Maybe that's Pat McAfee. But like, I look at it in two ways. One, I understand where Aaron Glenn's coming from, where like, because Rodgers even said that Glenn was like, look, I don't want to set a culture and really kind of start fresh with this Jets franchise, and you can't do that with a personality like Aaron Rodgers in the locker room, which is, I kind of think, one of the benefits for the Patriots. Like, Mike Vrabel comes in, he wants to do the same thing Aaron Glenn's doing, but there's no major personalities he has to contend with already in the building. And I think that's kind of where I see that alignment from Aaron Glenn, and so I get wanting to move on from Rodgers, just the process, and he makes it sound, he tries to make himself this super sympathetic character, which he's not, but I also agree, like, just call him instead of flying him out there.
Yeah, it gives us something to talk about, but his fall off has been precipitous in every way.
617-779-7937, we've been talking Pats and football all first hour, but Mego, it's time for some basketball. Woo! We'll get to the NBA playoffs. Celtics Magic coming up next here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.